everybody out there in After Rot Lime. Time is once again to begin with this craziness that I call After Rot. Hopefully you call it After Rot as well, but don't call it late for dinner because I'm always hungry. I get this weird thing. I'm always hungry now, and exercising, it does this thing. Tonight we have on the show Marcus Abshire. Hopefully I pronounced that properly. Did I, Marcus?
No, you nailed it. That's perfect.
Excellent. So I'm always going to be thinking of your name now as After the Shire.
Well, I'll take it. Shire is something that people used to call me a lot before anyway, so that's fine by me.
Oh, okay. I used to take Latin, so I'm a big thing on the words and stuff like that. And ab is the whole after or whatever in Latin. Odd stuff. So, I hear you're an author. You've written some books.
I have, indeed, with Raventail Publishing. Absolutely.
Excellent. And are they a fun organization to deal with?
Well, I've been with them probably not too long now. Let's see, a few months. So we just kind of got started. I think what they did is they kind of opened up a wing of they originally were the they did Westerns. And then they're pretty successful with the Western end of things. And so they kind of opened up a horror branch.
Yes, horror, yay!
Yeah. And so, you know, they started gathering authors. And I had a guy just kind of pop up on Facebook one day and said, hey, you should check this out. You know, I think your writing would fit it. So I looked over at it, and then I submitted it, and they accepted it. And I think they've been gathering authors, and now we're kind of moving over into the promotion stage of everything, and so that kind of is what led me here.
Exactly, and that's what led me to them as well, because it's like, hey, they've got at least another, when I looked through the list the last time, there was about five or six authors that I actually know, a couple of them I've met. I've had Andrew Weston on a few times, and he's actually who suggested I reach out to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember there was like three or four of us for the first couple of weeks, and all of a sudden, there's just author after author got added, and the whole thing just exploded, so it's been really great.
Yeah, it looks like there's about 30 or 40 of them on there.
Yeah.
Now, do you consider yourself a horror author or a dark fantasy author?
You know, I would probably have to say more of a dark fantasy. I actually first started writing urban fantasy. It's a little bit heavier in the urban fantasy. But there's a lot more elements as I got better at writing, or as I kind of, I don't know, sunk my teeth into what I really liked. I started writing a little bit timidly initially because I wasn't really comfortable with what I was doing. And then as I kept writing, I kind of got a little bit better and a little bit better feel for what I like to do. And it kind of turned a little bit darker. So I don't know what that says about me, but...
How dark is the dark?
Well, this one, the Ways of the Warlock series isn't super dark, but it's got elements in it. I think the darkest stuff that I like is the elements of the creatures that I present. They're just a little bit more on the Lovecraftian sort of tentacled, you know, monstrosities, which...
Tentacled monstrosities.
Yes,
Lovely.
Love that. Right up my alley.
So creatures. It's about a monster. It's about monsters, varieties, creatures, sort of thing.
I've been really fascinated with the idea of kind of a flawed hero. You know, I mean, it's a pretty normal, or at least a pretty popular concept of somebody mm-hmm. who it doesn't have necessarily a pretty good past. Actually, he's pretty much of a horrible person in his past as a warlock. You know, warlocks are kind of the type of people that would be, you know, not good. They like to kill, murder, they strove for power, and they gathered magic in doing so. And they usually used, they swore fealty to a dark god, so you can imagine what kind of stuff that would lead them to do. So I took a character like that, and I kind of reformed him a little bit. I kept his edge with him, hopefully, and then kind of made it to where he was struggling to do just a little bit better. But, of course, everything that he did in his past comes back to haunt him, and he's got to kind of deal with that, the fallout of what he used to be. And so, you know, the creatures that are in it tend to be full of tentacles, teeth, nastiness and murder.
So I'm not that I have anything wrong with any of that stuff, but do you watch any Japanese horror?
You know, a little bit. There's a bunch that pops up on Netflix, and I watched a little bit of it, and it does have. I had a friend of mine actually who watches a lot of Japanese horror, and he told me there was a new show on Netflix. I can't remember what it was, but he said it was directly reminded him of one of my books. So obviously, either if I haven't absorbed it all, I think it's pretty similar to that in some ways.
Do you have much in the way of zombies in your stories?
I'm a big zombie guy.
That's why I ask.
I know. I mean, obviously. But I don't have zombies in my stories.
Okay. I won't hold that against you.
That's okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. I tend to kind of stick more towards the aggressive, fast monsters. You know, for instance, one of the creatures is a deer that got transmutated. And so, you know, its antlers grew, tentacles spurted out of its stomach, you know, and it attacked the main character with, you know, with all of his glory and disgustingness. But they're pretty fast paced, high level, you know, strong, very dangerous monsters that I like to interweave into my stories.
Cool. You will definitely like some Japanese horror. There is stuff that they do with tentacles. It's like, what the? Oh my gosh, kind of stuff. It's like, it's just, they get into bizarro land. I mean, I like to watch Japanese splatter horror movies because they make me giggle. But their stuff, just okay, interesting, yeah, and move along.
I saw there was one where the guy, I guess the whole apartment complex is being overrun by different creatures.
Yeah, that's a good show.
Yes. And they're really good. They kind of just stick with you, you know?
Yeah. No, one of the things that I like about a lot of horror from outside of North America is they don't stick to, we're making a franchise. They're here to make a story.
Yeah.
And they do really good with that.
And if you don't have a good story, you don't have anything. And so you could throw, I mean, usually, I guess there are some movies out there that have survived just based on special effects and the monsters themselves. But if it's going to be anywhere real successful, you got to have at least a story, I think, that grabs people.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't have, I mean, okay, you can. We have hundreds of movies that I can point to and say, funny monster, cool monster, story was shite.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But writing, I mean, you got to work more with your head, so you got to rework with the words.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm watching a movie, you can get blown away by the visuals. That's kind of hard when everything's black and white and words.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out how to bring those visuals into people's brains, and so that they can experience them in the way that really grabs them. So absolutely, yeah. If you don't have a story, obviously that's what, you know, books and good stories are. It's just a way to grab people with the story itself.
So how long have you been working as an author?
Well, let's see. I think I put out my first one in 2012. I'd have to go back and look at that. I know I was writing around that time.
Cool.
So it's been a while. I did a lot of self-publishing initially. I went through the whole throwing out manuscripts to the big publishers, to a lot of different try to get agents, and that didn't work out for a while, so I just decided to see if I could do it on my own. I worked at that for a long time, and I think in that process I learned a ton of where I should be focused as an author, and it also expands your awareness of the depth of how to get books onto the market and all the different things you have to know to be successful, or at least to give yourself a shot at being successful. And so I think it prepared me so that when I met up with Raventail and, you know, I signed on, I had a lot of understanding of what the process was going to be. And I think it's actually ready for that at that point. It kind of all led me there.
And to that concept, the fact that when I approached Raventail, said, hey, I like some of your authors, why don't you bring some of them on? You were actually the first one to reach out directly.
Awesome. Yeah, well, I'm excited about it. You know, it's an opportunity. I've been doing it on my own, and now with Raventail, there's opportunities out there. that they offer through, you know, them with the name and just being, having some of those connections that I didn't have. So at any chance that I get, I'm going to take it.
Absolutely. And that's what I was about to say, is like understanding the fact that you have to work it, and it's not just you made a book and then you walk away. You got to do stuff.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, that's inherently difficult for authors, actually, for writers in general. I think a lot of times we kind of live in our brains and we live inside of our heads, obviously, because what we do is we kind of lose ourselves in our own imagination. And so, you know, you have to be able to step outside and then shift gears and have different almost personality mindsets to do what you need to do to be successful, or at least, like I said, to give yourself an opportunity for success. So it can be tough, but I think trying to do it on my own taught me that I needed a little help.
Well, everybody needs a little bit of help.
Absolutely.
I went a little quiet. Okay, I'm back.
All right.
Yeah, everybody needs help. I mean, nobody can do anything alone. Well, that's not true. There are a couple of things. We're not going to talk about those. They're depressing.
Yes, that's probably best. Just avoid those.
So one of the things that I like to actually tell people when they're actually saying, hey, I want to be a writer. Okay, get used to not talking to people.
Get used to, say that again, not talking to people?
Do talking with people.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, one of the things that I point out about Jonathan Mayberry, who was on last week, is that he engages. When he's on Facebook, people ask questions, he answers. And it's not like you're talking to a black hole or anything.
Right.
Do you spend time doing that?
I try to, absolutely. If anybody reaches out or contacts me, or Raventail has a lot of pages set up for the readers, and then they encourage the writers to be available and to be members, so that if there's any contact through our fans or anybody, they can have response from the writers. Because especially in today's, you know, when we have technology and all of these ways of contacting people almost instantaneously, I think it's important to be able to make those connections. I think computers sometimes make it to where that we lose those connections, but people really respond to those when you connect and you talk to the writers or the other readers and the people that are out there, you know, interested in what you're doing. So I'm absolutely active in that whenever I need to be, or if anybody reaches out, absolutely.
Excellent. And like I said, that's what I suggest all the time. I mean, you got to be a part of a community.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can get feedback. Oh, hey, that was awesome. I love that. I hated that crap. Don't do that again. And if there's enough of that going on, then you have a better understanding of what you're doing, good and bad.
Yeah, and you got to be willing to take the bad with the good.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a very personal thing you put out there with your writing. You know, it's a part of you. It's almost like, in a way, like a child. You put a piece of you out in the world, and if people reject it, it hurts. You know, it can hurt. And so,
absolutely. But
you
gotta,
so I think what helped me tremendously, honestly, was I found a few people at work that I trusted, and they gave me honest feedback. And, you know, it's helped tremendously, because if I started going a bad way, they'd call me out. If I wrote something that didn't fit the character, they'd call me out. And so, you know, it helps keep you honest with your writing and keep you true.
Cool. I mean, you got to have that thick skin that everybody likes to say.
Yeah.
Do you go to a lot of conventions? Besides the current state of the world or whatever, and when conventions were a popular thing and they're coming back now, do you go to conventions for, like, authors and stuff?
I haven't yet. When I really started getting very serious about pursuing this writing stuff, I think COVID kind of came right as I, you know, had a couple opportunities, and then COVID hit, and then, you know, everything kind of shut down for a while. And now with Raventail, you know, I'm reaching back out there, but I haven't done any conventions, but I'm always looking in the area, and I've already done some research on a few of the conventions in my city, and kind of the place that I could maybe get to in a day. You know, I'm a single dad, so it's kind of hard for me to be able to just leave for, you know, a multiple days. So I have to find places that are kind of close by.
Well, some conventions will let you just be there for one day. I've been to a number where, as part of the Horror Writers Association, we were on for panels and stuff like that. So we would have our member organization, we'd have I think we had about 20 people that were involved in the local branch, and we'd have like four on this day, four on this day, four on that day, four on that day, and they would cycle through different panels and stuff like that. So you don't necessarily have to commit to a whole four-day, five-day thing unless you're actually paying for a table.
But right.
It's like a money thing.
Well, I didn't know that. I'll have to look into that next time. Yeah. I know we've got a couple cons coming up in the area that I live in, so I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, and some of them are actually always looking for what they call tracks. Man, words today.
They're difficult. They're hard to find sometimes. That's why I Google. I Google them.
When I'm typing, I can just type and turn my brain off, and it's like all of a sudden I read the sentence like, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. I like that one.
Yeah.
I use words that I don't even remember what they mean, and it's like, no, that's the right word.
You have to almost check to make sure it was right after you wrote it.
Yeah, I actually do. I look up, it's like, what's that word mean? Oh, shit, that's the right word.
Yeah, I do the same exact thing. It's almost like a surprise. I didn't even know I had it in me.
Will you ever fall asleep while you're writing and then realize, oh, I was still writing while I fell asleep?
No. I've done that a couple times. Have you really?
Yeah.
No, I've never done that. I think for me, like when I'm writing, it plays out in my head like a movie. And so I have not fallen asleep, but I have zoned out. And then when I came back and I finished the chapter, I finished the scene, it was almost like I awoke or kind of, you know, came out of the water like I had been holding my breath. I have done that, but I've never fallen asleep writing.
When I do that, it's called stream of conscious. I'm just sort of like, I don't want to do anything. Get right to stuff. I was like, oh, shit, that actually sounds – no, that sounds like crap. Nope, yep, okay.
It's almost like being hypnotized.
Yes.
By yourself. Hypnotized. I don't know. That's something you could do by yourself, be hypnotized by your own words.
Ooh, that would be a bad idea. My words go into weird places. I'm not going to go there. So I just saw on the book list of you, Santa versus Zombie Apocalypse. Why is it that we all seem to do that?
What, the zombie apocalypse?
Santa versus the zombie apocalypse.
We all do that? Who else does it?
I don't know about everybody, but I have a poem that I wrote a long time ago about Santa and the evil apocalypse, and he's actually the beginning zombie.
I think because Santa is such an amazing character and a symbol for ultimate good in a way. That we love to put him in this horrible situation. You know, it's almost like we have to dirty up the clean, pure things in our life, I guess.
Well, Except, I mean, clean, fun things, dirty, fun things. It's all fun things.
As long as it's fun things, that's right.
So I'm assuming that was one of your earlier outings.
Yeah, I actually wrote that for my daughter. She wanted a holiday story when she was a little bit younger, so it's a little bit more geared to a younger audience, but it is about Santa's the good guy and he's got to save Billy from the zombie apocalypse that's ravaged the world. So he gets to fight zombie giants, zombie wolves, zombie dragons. he wields a katana with snowflakes embedded on the blade.
And the snowflakes are special.
They're just cool snowflakes. Oh, okay. He's a Santa.
It's a design thing more than it's just a magic character. Power.
Yeah, there's no. He's Santa. He's an elf. He's got magic powers already.
Excellent. I love the idea. Mine was more about Mrs. Claus was poisoning Santa because Santa was boring. So Santa then turned into a zombie and started killing everyone.
Did he start the zombie outbreak?
Absolutely.
He was patient zero?
He was patient zero. That's how my play went. And the elves were hunters, and they were trying to find it, and one of them got nicked, and it's like, oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff to it.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, it's I like to go as weird as possible sometimes, for shits and giggles.
Yeah. You know what's great about writing is you can do whatever the hell you want.
Precisely. Yep. You want to have giant things that go and swap planets out of the way, like marbles and whatever. You can do that.
You can do that. That's right.
Absolutely. And then you can have somebody animate that later. And it's like, okay, cool.
Yep. And that's, I think that was one of the first things that drew me to books themselves was just, you know, and I think anybody that loves to read recognizes this and knows it, is that you just lose yourself in a world of just complete difference than what you experience on a day-to-day basis. And it, and you can go anywhere and do anything. And that, I think that drew me as a writer too, the idea that I could just do whatever I wanted.
You see, I felt the same way. I mean, I loved reading, and then I was like, I've read a lot. I know how to put words together. Yeah. I can do this shit.
I can do it. Why not? I had no, you know, I don't know, formal or schooling. I didn't take, you know, the, I guess the creative writing, which I might still do that. It wouldn't hurt, I guess. It never hurts to kind of keep working on things.
I heard somebody quote something very, very specific. Learn the rules on how to do the things, then learn how to break them.
Yes.
Don't just start out with breaking the rules, because obviously it's like, which rules do you break? Those ones there? It's like, no, those ones are important. Those ones there? No, those are good ones to break.
Yes. And I think a good writer, it breaks almost all the rules anyway.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. They're there. Just, I think they're almost like guideposts to maybe keep you somewhere in the right ballpark, but they're not meant to be followed all the time.
Well, it's like playing Dungeons and Dragons. They're guidelines.
Yes.
They're rules, but they're really guidelines. I mean, yeah. Some people take it and take them too literal, and then some people take it too loose, and then there's other guys in the middle that says, like, hey, let's have fun.
You know, funny story about that. My brother, he loves Dungeons and Dragons. He's been trying to get us into it forever. And finally, a few years ago, I went to visit him, and we sat down and played Dungeons and Dragons. And for the first time, I loved it, because you just – it's in your head, you know. You play this game and you create the story kind of in your own imagination. It's very similar to writing, so, of course, I loved it. And the thing that I loved the most about it was that, yeah, there was a semi-defined kind of thing you had to do, but in that, you could do limitless things. You just mm-hmm. said, I want to do this, and the DM went with it, and you just saw how it played out. It was awesome.
Exactly. What character did you play? What character race did you play?
I was, I think I was a dark elf wizard.
Okay, I'm currently playing a half elf, half fire elemental.
Oh, beautiful. See, that's beautiful.
I love fire, so it's like it works for me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. It was like a dark elf rogue. I had some magic. But it wasn't much, but I used my swords for most of it.
Yeah, well, D&D had some extremely... Well, they've become very categorized with their rules. So, I mean, you got half mage, half rogue, and some other stuff.
Yeah, if my brother's listening right now, he'd be very upset that I don't remember. But,
well, you know...
But I had fun, and I still play it.
Well, you know, tomorrow, this will be online as an archive file, and you can send it to him.
I already told him. I said, hey, listen, I'm going to be on tonight, so...
Excellent. Yeah. Well, he might be one of the guests in the chat room, because there are a couple people... Well, it was Jack talking in the chat room, and a bunch of other people who are being very quiet, which is probably... I don't know those people, but they're welcome to ask questions. If they do, yeah. I'm sure I'll try and ask you, and we'll see how that goes.
Awesome. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So, I love talking about marketing. Because I think that is the cornerstone and the biggest bulwark that any author could do as far as their career going forward. How many other different things do you get into?
As far as?
Just pure marketing.
Sorry. He just texted me. I was a dwarven cleric. Sorry, I had to go back. I was a dwarven cleric. So my brother is listening, and I was a dwarven cleric, just to clarify.
Hello, Marcus's brother.
It's a shout out. So how many different things of marketing are we working on right now?
Yeah.
Well, I think what we started with was a campaign to kind of contact and get in touch with the readers. I think they're really trying to kind of create an author profile for each author and kind of get us out there so that we use the Facebook and the different sites to be available and to promote, kind of helping each other as well. So right now we went through a storm, a brainstorming session. We kind of got some ideas on what we should do. And on the Raventail side, they're going to be doing promotions. You know, they're going to be paying for promotions of the books to be on different newsletters and different sites. And then we offer free short stories for authors. Like I've got a short story, Dark Ascent. it's a prequel to the Ways of the Warlock series, and it's like in my series, the main character owns a bar in Flagstaff, Arizona, and and in the prequel kind of shows you how he attains that bar, and it kind of gives you a sense of who this guy is, and you know, and what kind of gives you a taste of what's going on. So
did
you know,
he win it in a bet?
No, he didn't.
Okay, good.
He did not win.
Because I've read that in a number of stories.
No, he didn't win it in bed. He won it. He got it as a favor for removing a curse from the old bartender that was leaving to go spend time with his new grandchild.
Ah, okay, that's a good spin. That's a good call on that.
Yeah. So I like to throw. I think ultimately I like to have at least, if not a happy ending, but at least something that you can kind of walk away and not feel completely, you know, you feel good about in a way, but throughout the ride, I don't want you to feel comfortable.
Gotcha. What I like to call a bright to semi-bright ending.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
Yeah, because it's like, got all this dark stuff, walk in the dark, work in the shadows, all this stuff. It's like, every once in a while, you got to have that little spark that says, well, you know what? It could actually work out for the best. Might not, but who knows?
Right, because a good drug dealer every once in a while gives out drugs for free.
Well, yes, and we do that in the comic book industry, too.
Are you in the comic book industry?
I have a comic shop.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's one of the many things I do.
I grew up inhaling comics as a young man.
So what kind of comics did you read?
I read. So I.
Do you still read?
I don't read currently at the moment. It's tough. But I did read the Marvel X-Men series. I read everything I get my hands on with X-Men. Of course, one of my favorite characters was Wolverine. I just loved him.
I know he's Canadian, right?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Trust me.
Okay.
You know, actually, he was probably one of the first characters that introduced me to the idea of Canada. I didn't, when I was a teenager, you know, being an American, we thought that America is the center of the universe. So I never really understood there was a world outside of where I lived. And he was a Canuck. And I remember that he, you know, he was a rough kind of Canadian. He actually was an X-Factor, X-Force, which was the Canadian secret weapons project where it all started.
Well, and Alpha Flight was.
Alpha Flight, correct. But wasn't he also part of one of the Canadian X Force?
The Canadian Force was called Project X.
Okay.
X Factor and X Force were. X Force was Deadpool and Cable. X Factor was a bunch of other ones and some other stuff.
That's right. Okay. It's been a while.
Fun fact. Did you know that the Wolverine character was created primarily as a result of Canadian content laws? So that Marvel could produce their comics in Canada to sell to the Canadian market, part of the rules up here are you have to have Canadian elements in it. So they created this throwaway character of Wolverine. He wasn't designed to be a long-running character. He's now one of their most popular.
Yeah, no, he's hugely popular. You know, that's interesting because my brother, the same one that reminded me that I was a dwarven cleric, told me, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as almost a joke during the comic era to come up with the most outlandish characters they could think of, and they came out with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and it became immensely popular.
And have you read any of the original TMNTs?
I have, yeah. I did when I was younger. Yeah, I read some of them.
Extremely violent.
Yes, they were horrible.
Not for children.
No, not at all.
And there's parodies, too. The geriatric gerbils.
Yes. It was like a joke.
Now the Church of Scientology started off as a bet.
Did it really? I did not know that.
I think it was what's-his-face bet each other that they couldn't create a religious environment, and then he just kept going with it, and it became popular.
And now here we are.
And there we are.
Years later, Tom Cruise is jumping off a couch.
I wasn't going to go there, but okay. Yeah, the world is a messed up place. I mean, look at the stuff. I mean, oh, by the way. Going back to marketing, When are you getting a TikTok channel?
I don't have a
TikTok channel.
That's a good question. I don't have any plans yet of getting a TikTok channel. My daughter would love it, that's for sure. She's addicted to TikTok.
It's kind of geared to the newer generations. I mean, I get it to a degree, but these like 30-second clips, it's like, I want some, that, oh, okay, next, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to grab someone about a book in 30 to 20 seconds. You know, you could do it with movies pretty well, but it's hard when you're, you know, when you got a book out there. It's like, what do you do? I guess I could jump on there and just read a few sentences.
Well, that's not the worst thing in the world to do. I mean, back what, 10 to 5 years ago, that was a popular thing, was putting out book trailers. I haven't seen anybody on Facebook put out a book trailer in ages. Yeah. Every once in a while, somebody does, but it's usually like soft colors and moody music and then a flash of the book and some background noise and then, hey, you should buy it, and then move on.
Yeah, and I think Apple had an app, or at least they had a program on their iPhones that did book trailers, or they did small, because I had a friend of mine make me one.
Yeah, that's right, they did.
And so there was this, that's I think where a lot of those came from, where, because they were very similar in like format and the design of the trailer, and but you could change different elements, but you could feel the similarity between a lot of them.
What we call cookie cutter templates.
There you go. That's it. Yeah. Cookie cutter templates.
Yeah, it's a fairly simple thing, similar thing with a lot of the audio programs and the video programs. It's like, hey, we know you want to be creative, but here's some basic samples. Just follow these. Oh, okay, yeah. These work. And then you just stick with it.
Yeah, and then everybody uses them, and then it gets flooded, and then everyone stops.
Nice. Hey, somebody just told me something in the chat room. Fred Pohl or Robert Silverberg, Harlan Ellison used to love telling that story. Philip K. Dick might have been involved on that one, too. They were all nuts. Yeah, they were. But they were all awesome authors. I mean, I loved and read all of them. Ooh, speaking of which, what would you say was your trigger book, story book or whatever, getting you into writing? I mean, I can clearly say what mine was, but...
So, that's an interesting story. I think as a combination, so I read constantly from the time I was in the military through I got out, and then for years and years I consumed everything I could find, and then I got a hold of Jim Butcher and I read the Dresden Files. Yeah, and I loved it. I mean, the first few books it took me but he got going, and that series was great, and I felt really connected to that series. And then when I ran out of his series, he hadn't finished, and I got to the end of what he had written so far, I started library hunting, and I went to the library, and I picked up a few books, and I just couldn't find anything I liked, and I found one, and it was, you know, it was a book about a woman who worked at, like, a paranormal DMV, and she gave out licenses to vampires and werewolves, and she had a roommate that was a werewolf and a vampire, and it was so horrible. Like, the concept itself, to me personally, it might be somebody else's jam, right? But to me, it was so horrible. I looked at it and said, if this person can be published and write a book, I can freaking write a book.
Yeah.
So I sat down, I wrote like a chapter or two, and I sent it without any explanation to my brother. And he read it and he said, what is this, a Jim Butcher clip? And I was like, hot damn. You know, he compared it to one of the best authors that I liked at the time. And of course, I'm sure my writing was heavily influenced, so it probably sounded a lot like the guy. But that was it, yeah. And I wrote, and from that moment on, I got consumed with the story. And every spare second I had, it wasn't something I consciously thought about. It just took me over, and I had to write it. And I just wrote this thing. And then I got addicted. I realized I loved it, and I got some decent feedback, and I realized, hey, it wasn't too bad. So, I just kept going with it.
So, are you gonna make this a career? Is it just gonna be a passion, or is it gonna be the sort of thing that you do and to get around?
Well, the plan, the goal is to make it a career. I would love nothing more than to make enough money writing to where I could feed myself, live comfortably, and just take care of the things I need to take care of. But if it doesn't work out and I don't get to that high level, then I will write until I can't write anymore because I absolutely love it.
Excellent.
I mean, what else is the best dream than to make a living doing something you love?
Sleeping.
Yeah. Okay.
There are jobs for sleeping.
I know you get paid for doing sleep studies and stuff, right?
I'm not doing that because, like, what? People are going to watch while I'm sleeping? It's like, no, that's creepy. I don't want to do that.
You'll be unconscious. I mean, I don't know. What do you care, right?
But they're videotaping it.
Oh, that's true. That is creepy.
I was like, what if I say something inappropriate, like, I like Britney Spears? I don't know.
That'll be on camera forever.
Precisely. I couldn't deal with that.
You can't have that out there. No way.
Cannot have that. So speaking of corny, as you were talking about with the individual who's writing that you read, it's like, what? Have you ever watched the show Coal Shack?
No. Coal Shack?
Yeah, The Night Strangler.
It sounds familiar. I'll have to look into it, but no, I can't. Not off the top of my head.
I'm rewatching it right now. It's from the 70s. He's a journalist. He finds things. And it's basically a Monster of the Week show. But the X-Files are based on... Chris Carter got some of his ideas from the show. It's very corny. It's very 70s. But it fills in with the same.
Coal Shack. I'll take a look at it. I love corny 70s stuff. I love all things. I think some of the best movies that I like are ones that have a twist of just oddball, either humor or something a little bit different. I like almost like sometimes comedy horrors, whether it's a horror, but it's twist of something. You know, I think one of the last ones I watched that I really, really fell in love with was Cabin in the Woods.
Awesome movie.
Oh, I just thought that blew me away. That whole scene where they released all those monsters, I was just loving it.
Yeah. Oh, who's going to bet on this and bet on that? Oh, I bet on zombies too. No, you bet on that guy and a zombie. These are redneck torture zombies. Yeah. Different ball of wax.
Just every aspect of that movie was just fabulous.
Absolutely. I agree.
Down to the fatalistic ending where they released the old god and it was annihilation. I mean, you couldn't make it. I mean... You know, a lot of times when you're writing, you know, you have a story, but in the back of your mind, you keep in mind the market, because if you do want to make a living out of this, you got to at least understand and hope to make something that people are going to buy. And so a lot of the genres, series are popular, you know, having 4, 5, 6 books where readers can get their teeth into and they can read a lot of your books. So it's hard, as much as you want to write a book at the ending where everything is destroyed, because then it kind of, you know, doesn't give you an opportunity to write a sequel.
Well, that all depends on the approach. Check out Savage Dragon. It's a comic book. He dies in every issue.
Oh, yes. Savage Dragon is awesome.
Yeah. By the way, I think there's some new Dresden Files books coming out, too.
Yeah, well, the last two was Battleground and what was the other one? I can't remember. The Battleground was right before there was the last one. But he just released two relatively recently in the last year or
right.
so.
That's what was in my head, because I remember seeing the name in lists and stuff like that. And it's like, well, I've never read his books, but I've read the comics, and they were fun.
Yeah, the comics are great. I like the comics. Sometimes they fill in a little bit more of the detail in between some of the books, which is kind of cool.
Then we got pictures.
Yeah. You know, I always find it interesting to see what the creature that he described looks like, because you know he's got a hand in the design of the characters. So he can, you know, show you exactly what he thought. And it's interesting to see if it matches.
It was fuzzy. No, not that fuzzy. Oh, no. Yeah, too fuzzy. So, in regards to actual writing, what do you consider the prime writing environment? I mean, do you like a lot of music? Do you like pure silence? Do you like to see things being played against the sidewall that are like, what kind of monster face is that?
No, I have a teenage daughter who is very, she requires an extra little bit of time. So for me, the best place to write or the best environment is a quiet room where I can just disappear. Sometimes I'll have a little bit of light rock and roll in the background. just because sometimes in my mind, you know, it's like the action sequences is like a music video where there's heavy rock and there's blood and there's swords and fangs. And so I like that sometimes. But if I could just have a quiet space where I'm not interrupted for a good couple hours, then that's all I need.
Cool. Just trying to figure out the whole quiet space. Yeah, I don't have those.
You don't have those.
I'm a character of chaos. I love noise.
So do you have like flashing lights and disco balls and rock and or what?
Visual chaos less. I just have a lot of stimulation around me because I just have lots of books, lots of videos, statues, action figures, all this crap that's all over the place, and that captures me. But noise, I gotta have noise. I can't have pure silence to write.
Well, I know if I hit my dream of making it, I'm gonna create my own writing kind of man cave, and in it, I'm gonna put all the nerd stuff that I want. I'm talking, you know, action figures, posters, lightsabers, you name it. It's just that's my dream. I'm not there yet, but we're working towards it.
Cool.
But I still need quiet.
Okay. Well, like I said, I mean, for everybody, this is a thing I say. Everybody's everything. Everybody has different ways of doing things. Everybody has different ways of listening things, liking things. I mean, if everybody liked everything the same and everybody did everything the same, we'd be all bloody boring and die within a couple of generations.
Absolutely. Nobody wants that.
Well, some of us want some of them too, but that's a different story as well. So, are you a potter or a pantser?
Am I a potter or a pantser?
Yes. Do you like to plot out and design the entire thing, plotter, or do you like to just wing it as you're going?
You know, it's interesting. I kind of ebbed and flowed through that. The first book I wrote was like a pantser. I did not come up with anything, really. I wrote each chapter as it came to me, and then the story kind of developed. And then as I got about halfway through the story, I had the ending kind of in mind, and I had that plotted out. And then the next couple books, I developed a little bit more of a plotting system where I would have the middle and end, or at least the end, and then I would figure out how to get there. I find it interesting where, as a writer, one of the big things you want to make sure is your plot is consistent and there's no huge issues with it. And if you write from A to B, sometimes you can write yourself into a corner, and you're like, well, how do I get out of that, you know? And so, or how do I get from where I am now to where I need to be? And so I found if I plot out the ending and I know what the ending and all that is, then getting there I'm almost working my way backwards, and there's no way I can get lost. It's like I'm cheating. So I create the story. And then as I wrote more books and I tried to force myself to write a more intricate plot, I started having to plot things out much more. So at this point, I pretty much do kind of like a hybrid where I do bullet points on like the beginning, middle, and end, and then I work through the details as I go.
Now, do you use a regular word processor like Word or any of the number of infinite numbers that are out there, or do you use anything else?
I just use Word. Yeah, absolutely. I use Word.
Have you ever tried Scrivener?
No, I've heard of Scrivener, but I've never tried it. No. What would Scrivener give me?
Scrivener is like the way that your book is going to be is how you write it. So you write it in chapters, you write it in pages, and you write it in all this stuff. You've got all this stuff that you can have, all the tools where you can have everything built into the actual file that says, I want to follow this character. What does he do? What are his key points? What is all his impact points? What are the special weapons that somebody has? So on. And it allows you to keep track of all this stuff without having to have, as I like to call, the big wall of yellow post-it notes,
which I
don't have anymore. I stopped doing that like 20 years ago.
Do you use Scrivener?
I use Scrivener sometimes, but most of the time my raw writing, I just use a text editor, and then I parse it into either Word or Scrivener, and then I start building it. When I build the actual format for whatever book I'm using, I try using Scrivener because that can just export straight into the file types that Amazon likes to use.
Right. Well, I'll have to look into that because that actually sounds helpful.
It's also not very expensive.
I usually do all of my stuff on a – I got some notebooks, and I bought writing notebooks, you know, and I just fill in the notebooks as I go, and then I keep track of it that way. And I think the idea of keep – I have had difficulty at times when I write a story with a lot of characters. I lose track. I'll spend 15 minutes going back and reminding myself who is this character I created, which makes me feel bad because I created them and I forgot them.
Yeah.
But it happens.
Having a story with over 300 characters.
Yeah, that's well, then you need Scrivener, yeah.
And they're like just background characters.
That you've created a story with 300 characters?
I have a series that I have to, at some point in time, finish writing down. I have plot lines, structures, characters, background information. At one point, I was creating individual, and this was in MySpace time, creating MySpace pages for each character so that I'd eventually have like 300 of these MySpace pages set up for all of them. Yeah, I had that ambitions.
That just kind of relaxed. That sounds frightening to me. I mean, I like a good 5, 6, maybe 10 characters that I can really sink my teeth into and kind of, you know, for me, I think I really try to make characters that, you know, and for me, I just can't do more than that, I guess. It just, I start to lose it. My stories are usually a little bit more localized. So I wrote a lot of first person narratives. So, you know, when you're writing a first person, you're living through that person's eyes. So it's hard sometimes to create all of these different characters because there's only so many people that person can interact with. Excuse me.
But, well, unless he's fighting in an army.
That is true. That is true. But usually then they're just a horde of, for me, it's just a horde of monsters that he takes out or has to deal with. But that is true.
Yeah. I mean, but the whole fun of it is just finding stuff.
Oh, and then exploring exactly whatever the hell you want to explore with it. Yep.
Yeah.
So but I'm writing a creature feature right now, and I'm actually doing a third-person narrative, and that is very interesting because it's a little bit outside my wheelhouse, but I find it's extremely fun.
Cool. I'm more familiar with third person. I mean, that's how I grew up with reading and writing and whatever. So first person has always been, okay, this is weird.
Yeah, it can be.
Have you ever tried exploring with second person? That's
no,
weird shit.
I have not. I think that I did almost everything that I've written has been first person, except for the Santa versus Zombie Apocalypse book. That was third person, and then this creature feature I'm doing, and I, you know, so I don't even know if I'd feel comfortable even looking at second person at this point.
I looked at it and it was like, what the fluff? No, I'm not doing that.
Well, you gotta have boundaries, you know. You gotta know. You gotta put your foot down somewhere, right?
Try getting into fifth person.
Oh, I don't even.
That's
know what
a
that
whole
means.
Nother world.
What does that even mean?
I have no idea. I was just making shit up.
I'm about to say, I don't even know what that means.
Well, they all talk about breaking the fourth wall with Deadpool and whatever. I was like, well, there's got to be a fifth wall as well.
Would he be sitting right next to you watching you as you write about him?
Oof. That would be weird.
Yes,
but funny.
Deadpool could pull it off, that's for sure.
Yes. That Deadpool is one of those very few characters. You know what? He was originally a throwaway character as well. He just had a brief appearance. He was an assassin, blah, 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 and then bam. And then 15, 20 years now, he's one of the most important characters in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, he's extremely. It's interesting to me how a lot of these characters they just make and throw away actually take hold.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know? Both Marvel and DC have in excess of 5,000 characters in their universe, and you know maybe 5 of them?
Yeah, at least that, yeah. I mean, I know a lot, but that's because I was a consumer of the comics for years, so I have a broader range. But your average person who got turned on to Marvel in the last 10, 15 years, you know, they just know the core characters.
And everything that they feed them in the movie.
Yeah, that's it. All the ones that they're putting either in the movie or Disney Plus or, you know.
Everybody loves Baby Groot.
Yeah.
4 or 10 years ago, nobody but me and a handful of other people knew who Groot was.
Honestly, I didn't even know who Guardians of the Galaxy were, and I consider myself a comic book fan, and I did not ever get into that comic story of Guardians of the Galaxy, and so I felt like a failure as a comic book reader, you know?
Guardians of the Galaxy was one of those things that I continuously point at. It's like, this was Marvel knowing what they were doing and picking something that most people were not going to know anything about and making it good and making it pop. It's different. It's not the comics, but they made it its own thing. So now you got all these people who's like never picked up a comic book in their life, but they know who Baby Groot is.
They know who, right? They know and who Raccoon, what is it, Rocket? They know Rocket, who Rocket is.
And Star-Lord. And we're waiting for Adam Warlock to show up in the next one.
You know, it's interesting, too, is obviously once a movie comes out and it becomes popular, you're going to see a lot more merchandise for it. But yep. I go to the bookstore now, and a third of the shelf is Guardians of the Galaxy comics, where before I didn't see that much of it at all, if ever.
Yep. And over the last 10 years or so, media tie-in products have become very popular. I mean, Aliens, Predator, all of the Marvel movies, the Star Wars stuff, they all have these other media tie-in books being written by all sorts of authors.
I mean, heck, even Jim Butcher wrote a Spider-Man novel.
Yep. I would write a Spider-Man novel.
No?
I would write a Deathlok novel.
Ah, that's more your speed, Deathlok, yeah.
Yeah, I like stuff like that.
What about Punisher?
He's also not my speed either. Ghost Rider, total.
Ah, okay. So I'm starting to get a feel for you now. Okay.
Yeah. For Marvel Comics, it was always the supernatural and the spaceship.
Yeah. So John Constantine, you a fan of him?
I enjoyed what they did with the Warner Brothers show, which was weird as hell because it was like, why are you guys putting this show in? It's totally not your style.
It was pretty good.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it too.
Oh, have you been watching Moon Knight?
I have. Yeah, I haven't.
Did you watch this week's episode?
I have not yet. I'm behind a little bit. I'm on the
I'm not telling anybody anything that happened, but it's freaking awesome. Okay, I love this episode.
Good. I've been a little bit on the fence with the Disney Plus the Phase 4, some of the shows they've put out, but I am enjoying Moon Knight right now. I mean,
yeah, they're doing the balance thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Hook the kiddies when they're young with the kiddie stuff, and then get the adults with the, oh my god, that's so freaking cool and, stuff.
Now, as long as they keep the movies, and I understand, you know, Disney Plus, it's like a series, so, you know, it reminds me of network television shows, right? So, as long as they keep the movies pumping out as well as they have, I'll stick
with it. But without commercials.
Yes, I like that. I am a big fan of that.
So I've been telling somebody in the chat room, his friend, Jack, he's been a regular. He's a regular. I told him he can't watch Moon Knight until it's all out because the way that each episode ends, it's driving me up the wall. Him is going to drive totally up the wall.
So they like to end on a cliffhanger.
Every single freaking episode. Yeah. And this week's episode is like, oh, shit. I yelled at the TV.
So sometimes I like to wait. If I get busy and I'm like, the week is over and it's I'm almost a few days away from, I've already have one I need to watch. I'm a few days away from the next one to drop. I'll just wait so that I can binge it a few times, different shows. So I might have to wait until what? Today's Wednesday. So they just dropped one today, didn't they?
They dropped one today and the last episode comes out next week.
Oh, perfect. So yeah. I might wait and just do all three in a row.
There you go. My preference nowadays is the binge shows because the way that they're creating them is, story, 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 get the hook. And I hate that.
And I think they're making them purposely to binge so they leave that cliffhanger.
Yeah, and the whole idea about making it episodically is so that you keep coming back. It's like, oh, you don't just get it all in the free trial and then you go away. Oh, wait, you got to actually come back 7 weeks.
I mean, they're smart. They got to make money, right? And that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
At least it's better, I think, than the episodes where you'd watch as a kid and they'd wrap everything up in one 30-minute segment. Because at least the story continues. You know, like with Supernatural, those shows would start and end. they'd have an ending usually to that episode, you know? And you'd feel some sort of at least closure on that one episode. So this is almost like one long movie.
Yeah.
Which I like. I enjoy that.
And it's good, because in the old days with cable television, you had 26 episodes to a season, and it's like, how many different stories do you have to explore? And if you're going to have a long story and short stories throughout it all, and it's like wrapped up. having six episodes or eight episodes or whatever, and you're just like, here's a solid story, and you can just tell one story.
Yeah, you don't have to put a bunch of filler in throughout the season just to make it to the good season finale episodes.
Yeah. Oh, Jack just mentioned Babylon 5, one of my favorite sci-fi shows of all time. Cheesy compared to now in special effects, but the stories were like top notch.
I know Babylon 5 had a huge following.
Still does.
Yeah, still does.
They're talking about a remake.
Well, good. I think that's great. I didn't watch a lot of it myself, but I know it's very popular. I'm always down for new takes on old stuff.
Yeah, they have. That one thing is, they were real science fiction, and they had the writer JMS, J. Michael Straczynski, had a good solid grounding in science and used that for most of the show. So it wasn't like the oh, Jack, I'm going to mention Battleship. If you've seen this movie, it's one of my hated most movies of all time. Tokyo drifting a battleship in the ocean just doesn't happen.
So that's where you're going to draw the line is
Tokyo. That's my line that I draw on movies. Absolutely abhor that movie for that reason alone.
We all got to have standards. We all got to have standards.
Yeah.
As soon as I walk into a movie, I suspend all belief in reality. So for me, as long as the story is somewhat compelling, I kind of try to at least allow myself to. Otherwise, I'm going to get angry because so many movies are so unbelievably unrealistic that you're just like, are you serious? Did you really just do that?
I'm giggling because I watch a lot of bad movies, and I watch them on purpose because I find them hilarious.
Sharknado.
Categories. Sharknado is probably not even close to some of the worst movies I've seen.
Oh, you must really watch some humdingers.
Check out a movie called Virus Shark. I watched this a couple weeks ago. So it's basically the COVID thing and whatever, but now it's zombie sharks have infected the entire planet. Everybody's dying, whatever. But the entire budget of this movie is $182. How good of a movie. Now, the story's not bad. The acting's not terrible.
You know.
But how much can you do with $182?
I'll tell you what. I'd have to watch that just to see how much they could do with $182.
That was one of my reasons for watching that
movie. Yeah. You know, you just said, let's see what you can do, because that's some creative stuff right there.
Yeah. But like I said, everything to everyone. There's something for everyone.
Yeah.
But still, Battleship, I just could never get past that movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues.
That
I know my dad liked
so
it because he bought out the old battleship, you know. What was that? Was that the USS wasn't the Constitution, was it?
It wasn't the Nimitz, was it?
I think it was Nimitz class, right? Aren't they a class? But it's still got a different name.
You have a mothballed warship in a museum status. It doesn't have live ammo. It doesn't have the capacity to fire a gun. Those guns are totally ripped out from the inside.
Listen, you had 15 retired Navy vets. They could do
it. Exactly.
I don't know what the problem is.
Uh-huh.
It's still nuclear powered. They're good to go.
It's my favorite movie to trash. There's so many things.
Yeah. Yeah,
but this is not a show about the movie Battleship. This is a show about Marcus Abshire.
There you go.
And his books about the Warlock and some dark stuff. Do you have more plans for more books in that story series?
I've written 6 books in the Ways of the Warlock series. So Dark Test was the first one. And they're all are out and available on Amazon right now through Raventail Publishing. And kind of depending on how this one goes, we'll see if there's more to come. But I'm writing more stories for them because they have ideas for what's popular in the market right now. So I'm still working on other things.
So how do you people find Raventail? And it's not Ravens, it's Raven.
Right, it's Raventail. You can just Google Raventail. They've got a Facebook page. They've got a website. And if you sign up to the newsletter, you can get free downloads of books. And they're looking at building a big newsletter base. And so they're offering free stuff and free books so that they can get people signed up.
Excellent. And how do people find you?
Well, I'm I think the best way to probably do it is on Facebook. You can just go Marcus Abshire Author. That's pretty much where I'm the most active. But you can also go to Amazon. I've got an author page under Marcus Abshire. And you can find all my books published through Raven Tale and the ones I've done on my own.
And how many books did you have out there? Because I saw 14 on Goodreads.
Yeah, well, some of those are different covers that I've changed over time, and Goodreads isn't really good about updating the covers. But I think I lost track. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think 10 now, with the Raven Tale books the six of those.
Cool. And someday soon you'll be able to find you at a convention.
That's right. I'm not there yet, but I will keep posting it onto the Raven Tale website and on the Facebook, the Raven Tale page on Facebook. So if you just stay on that, then you'll find any updates for any upcoming events or any new releases.
Excellent. And when people start finding you and they get really creepy, you will do what to them?
I will answer all their questions to the best of my ability.
Excellent. That's a good answer. Yeah, I was going with something else.
Yeah, no, I like creepy. I mean, if they want to be creepy online, that's fine. They can do whatever they want. We're miles away.
Yes.
You know, doesn't bother me.
You hear a knock at the door?
Well, that's a little different.
Yeah.
We'll deal with that when it happens, though.
Okay, cool. Well, Marcus, it's been great having you on the show. Appreciate it tremendously.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really had a good time.
Excellent. And you can put this in your list of things that you can share, because I will make it available to share tomorrow.
Awesome. I really appreciate it.
And everybody there in Afterrot Land, have yourselves an amazing time while I move my mouse over to the end roll credits. And come back again every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on this Bat Channel. And I can't say that anymore, can I? No. On this Zombie Channel at this Zombie Time. Do what you need to do. Be what you need to be. Be happy. Be friendly. Be zombie. Kill everyone. Actually, don't do that part. People frown on that one. Check us out on the Instagram, on the Twitter, and the Facebook. Be all that you can be with an after-rock kind of creepy side kick.